Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Don't sweat the technique.
Broadcasting live from Pleasure Pier Galveston as part of ESPN Houston Summer Circuit.
Presented in part by our grand prize sponsor, Power On E-Bikes.
From the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Sweet Scoot, Pleasure Pier, Galveston, La Playa. Jordan Alvarez was here a little bit earlier. 713-780-ESPN. I am ready to make this proclamation.
Right now. La Playa right now.
Thank you, dude. A little late. A little tardy there, Dubon. I'm ready to make this proclamation. I'm ready to make it. Josh Miller and Bill Murphy are better pitching coaches than Brent Strom.
Ooh.
They have passed Brent Strom for me. And this isn't to demean Brent Strom. A lot of times when we're comparing greats and you have one great higher than another great, you're like, oh, you hate this guy. You're demeaning the guy. I think Brent Strom was awesome. I thought Brent Strom was great. Obviously was on the golden era. Brent Strom always had a bunch of dudes, though. Always had unbelievable pitchers. Dallas Keuchel, Justin Verlander, Gerrit Cole, peak Lance McCullers, Charlie Morton before he left. I mean, you look at all of the laundry list of pitchers that Brent Strom had, like Hall of Famers. Like he had dudes. Josh Miller and Bill Murphy are like putting together Lance McCullers armed again. Hunter Brown was awful at the beginning of last year. People didn't even think he could be a starter. They thought he was going to be a reliever. People think that Framber Valdez is a basket case. Look how consistent he's been. Brandon Walt's been all over baseball, and he's turning the red-headed Dallas Keuchel right before our eyes. Colton Gordon, I'm not even sure he's a big league pitcher. He looks like a big league pitcher. The law firm Miller and Murphy, same thing with Ryan Gusto. Brian DeBrake, they used to be called a mental midget. He's become the best setup man in all of baseball. Josh Miller and Bill Murphy have had equal production of Brent Strom, and they haven't had the dudes that Brent Strom had.
That would have been my rebuttal would be, I hear what you're saying, and it's the tale of two different types of pitchers. I think that they have done more with less, guys that you would expect less of. But I remember when they made the move for Morton, and everybody's like, who, why, and why do they need him? And the fact that Gerrit Cole, yeah, you got him from Pittsburgh. Yeah, he's got a big arm, but what can you do with it? And even Verlander saying that once to Houston that he was able to get like a second chapter of his career because of what they were able to teach him and work with him on. I think McCullers, you know, was basically, I think the majority of what he had, he got from the system as well as having the, you know, the God-given ability to pitch the baseball. I think you're right. I think you preface it by saying neither side did a bad job. Neither side has been anything short of fantastic. But I think that's where the true discussion would be what Strom was able to do with guys that had dark talent but just couldn't kind of put it all together, as opposed to guys that you're basically taking off a scrap heap that no one ever thought was going to be what they're doing right now.
What's only the scrap heap? It's Hunter Brown, top three AL Cy Young, when last year he almost was sitting down with an ERA of like 7.5, and Keith Law was saying he shouldn't be in a starting rotation. It's settling down Framber Valdez from being the volatile, up-and-down guy and being a super consistent starting pitcher. Like all of the guys that you mentioned about Brent Strom, and again, Brent Strom's a legend. He is a great. We love Brent Strom in Houston and always will. And I remember whenever he was fired, people were like losing their minds. Like, oh no, we're never going to recover from this. Again, I'd argue that Murphy and Miller, I think, have been better than Strom. All of the guys that you mentioned had success before they came to Houston. It might not have been equal success. Verlander's success was a little further away than when he was acquired with Houston, and when he was acquired from Detroit, wasn't having a great year. Gerrit Cole was really good in Pittsburgh. I feel like it's being a little disrespectful, like, oh, Gerrit Cole was nothing before he came to Houston. Now he became a Cy Young guy.
Yeah.
In Houston, where he wasn't quite yet that in Pittsburgh. Morton had great years before he got to Houston as well. He was always kind of injury prone. But all of the guys that Brent Strom had already had success elsewhere. This crew is getting success for like the first time with some of these guys, especially Hunter Brown. Brian Abreu would be in the mix. And then all the journeymen who, like, okay, who in the world is this guy? And then we're talking about Brandon Walter being like a legitimate starting pitcher out of nowhere in his late 20s.
Isn't Hunter Brown's success attributed to Alex Bregman?
I mean,
when he fixed them.
Well, it wasn't only Alex Bregman.
No, but I'm just saying that helped. I just throw that in that helped as well. Again, because I'm not trying to throw shade on either side. I think that as much as people did, and there's no question, they doubted it. I don't remember, was that a mutual party of the ways? Or however he left, I know people lost their mind. I know people thought the end of the Astros' mass pitching success, it's over. The whole, you know, the whole lab and the scientific approach is gone now. And instead, as much as people wanted to crap on the other two guys stepped up and done a ton to get the kind of results that nobody, and I really feel confident saying that, very few to nobody believed these two guys were going to be able to carry the torch, and they have.
Yeah, they thought it was over.
Yep.
They thought it was over.
Yep.
Brent Strom left after the 2021 World Series, according to Google AI. And then you know what happened the very next year?
They won the World Series.
They won the World Series. He left at the same time as Correa. Like, it's pretty incredible with, like, Christian Javier. Like, whenever Brent Strom left, too, he's like, you know, it's my time to leave. All these new guys are Murphy and Miller's guys anyways. I remember him discussing that. It's to me, it's just incredible. Like, and I've had this thought for a while, and you see Brandon Walter churn out a quality start. Gordon's pitching into the sixth, seventh inning. Ryan Gusto, who has an average stuff, is pitching quality performances. Jason Alexander, quality outings. No, I think that these two guys aren't getting the love that they probably deserve. Brent Strom got a bunch of love, rightfully so. Rightfully mm-hmm. so. I think that these two guys are doing more with less, or maybe doing equal with less.
You know,
don't get the praise that they should.
The other fun part of this, to kind of see if everything that we're talking about has the chance to even continue even further. The biggest challenge is going to be Neris, because the minute they got Neris back and he went out to L.A. and he didn't pitch in that series, they already said that they had caught some things, they were working on some things and changing some things.
Uh-huh.
That's when you realize, one, he's willing to do it. A lot of pitchers stubborn in their ways aren't going to be open to that, but because he had his best successes here and the fact that he trusts those guys, it's going to be interesting to see what Neris can, again, try to turn into be for this team.
How about last year with Yusei Kikuchi?
Yeah, and how about Montero the year before?
That yeah, he regressed.
No, but I mean, I'm saying the year he wasn't it Murphy and Miller his big year before he had the contract.
Yeah. No, I think that the job they did with Yusei Kikuchi was probably something
masterful.
That needs to be high on this
no
list
question.
Too. Like, he went from being this kind of meh starter with stuff, and then they put it all together quickly, mind you. And the Astros won like every single time he went out there. Texter Garrett Cole had sub-500 records and ERA of 4 before he came to Houston. He was 12-12 the year before he came to Houston with a 4.26 ERA. He was 7-10 with a 3.88 ERA the year before that. How about in 2015, though, when he had a 2.60 ERA, won 19 games, and was fourth in Cy Young voting? So, like, kind of cherry-picking stats there.
Yeah, which, again, we know that people are capable of doing to support their argument. But, I mean, that's why I said I wasn't trying to crap on Garrett Cole, but there's a guy that everybody saw had an unbelievable arm and the potential to be great. He just wasn't in Pittsburgh.
That's not true.
I don't think he was great.
He was 19-8 with a 2.60 ERA 1 year in Pittsburgh. It was fourth in Cy Young voting. That's not great.
For 1 year, great. Okay.
His first 3 years in the bigs, 3.22 ERA, 3.65 ERA, 2.60 ERA. He was Paul Skeens before Paul Skeens.
I don't see it that way, and I don't think that he was that great. And I think that once I think he maximized his potential.
Dude was the number one pick in the draft.
Like, I understand that. But, again, it's Pittsburgh. And one thing to say, you can't look at the record because the Pirates have been woeful offensively. But and you can be like Paul Skeens is this year. But I think that overall, I think Garrett Cole bumped it up a notch to a notch and a half when he got to Houston and then carried it over to the Yankees.
Yeah, I really wouldn't argue that. I wouldn't argue that he didn't bump it up a notch. But to act like Garrett Cole wasn't Garrett Cole prior to being an Astro is ignoring what Garrett Cole was prior to being.
I'm not ignoring
it. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the texter.
Okay.
Because he was a dude in Pittsburgh. Like, the two years in Houston is 2 years. He was 2.88 ERA, 2.50 ERA. He had a 2.60 ERA one season in Pittsburgh. Like, he was pretty close to that guy already.
What was Morton? You were talking about his good years before. Because I really, that was one where they made the trade. I'm like, who? I was oblivious to who he was and if they even really needed him. And then he just became a stud.
Morton was always a guy who had stuff but was always hurt. Like, his best years, he had one in Pittsburgh, ironically, where he had a 3.26 ERA and 20 starts. Like, good. 7-4, like, not a great record. But Pittsburgh, I don't know how good they were. But 7-4 and 20 starts is nothing to sneeze at. The next year, he had a 3.72 ERA. He had a year, fourth year in the bigs, where he had a 3.83 ERA and 29 starts. Like, he was a good pitcher that was always hurt, and then Luno took a flyer on him, and then he, like, put it all together. And he was very good in Houston. I mean, there's no argument about that.
No. I mean, he's legendary in Houston. If you're Charlie Effin Morton to do what he did, he will always be legendary in Houston. That's why I said he bumped it up a notch too.
Texter always thought Strom left to make room for Miller. It was always a weird way that they did it, because I remember Strom also, like, didn't he retire right away? Like, I think he said he retired. Like, why are you walking away? And he's like, well, it's time for these new guys. Most of these young guys are theirs. And then, like, 3 weeks later, he was the pitching coach in Arizona.
And his explanation was, well, you know, we live in the off season in Arizona, so I won't have to be away from my wife as much, and we'll be right there where we normally live anyway. So it's convenient. It works out. I still love doing what I do. But, yeah, it was always kind of convoluted where you're like,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, it was a very weird way of doing it. It felt like I always got the feeling that he was kind of pushed out. Because it was Click at the time. I feel like he was kind of pushed out by Click to go to the younger, probably more analytical guy. Not to say that Strom was anti-analytics, because I think he actually was one of the old guards that actually took to it. But I always felt like he was kind of pushed out.
Now, you say that. I wonder, and I was going to ask, because I legitimately don't know. I've never heard this. But Stromming to me seemed like a guy that was set in his ways, that he was open to kind of getting into the analytics, but he wasn't analytical per se. Kind of like a little bit more than Dusty, where Dusty understood it, but Dusty was kind of on analytics. I'm just curious how deep into and how bought into the analytics was Strom.
I always felt that he was super bought into it.
Really?
I feel like he was one of the old veteran baseball guys who adapted to it and was open to it. Because, I mean, he was the guy that's like, hey, let's get the fastball up in the zone, which was kind of a new analytical thing. People didn't think that you should have fastballs up in the zone. And then, yeah, it became that. Garrett Cole was close to that guy, but when he came to Houston, he was that guy, Miller and Murphy. I mean, I don't know. That third year that he had in Pittsburgh was pretty dang good. Seemed like Stromy and Dusty might have had issues. Yeah, I wonder. I wonder if they would have butted heads. I don't know.
It would seem like two ex-players – that were old school, how they were cut from the same kind of cloth that way. You would think that they would be okay, but again, I've never heard either way, so I can't say definitively.
I would think they would be okay too. I think they would be okay.
Yeah, it would
too.
Seem that way.
Didn't they spend a couple of years together?
Yeah,
because Brent Strom he left after the 2021 season.
Right.
Dusty came after the 19 World Series, right?
Yeah, he did.
So they had some time together.
They brought him in to handle the scandal.
I don't think that they butted heads.
I don't either.
Like, Dusty's definitely, like, has a say, but he also lets his guys coach, especially a pitching coach.
I think it lends itself more to what you mentioned earlier, which is the fact that that in the case of Miller, he had kind of brought up the next generation of pitchers, and he was more in tune and in touch and had worked probably more with them because his job was to work with the frontline guys that were in his starting rotation that were big names with high expectations. And Miller was bringing up the next generation.
I also want to say that Strom had a home in Arizona. Well,
that's what I said.
So, like, okay, did you say that?
Yeah, I said that's why 3 weeks after he said he was going to retire, he's like, well, now we get to live in our house. The wife's there. We're good.
I always felt like there was a little bit of pushing out, but maybe there wasn't. Maybe it was just like, hey, I'm going to retire, go to Arizona. And then, like, Arizona's like, hey, you want to live here and be a pitching coach?
Some guys actually look out for their understudy, too, and say, I don't know how many more years I'm going to be doing this. This is the ideal situation for you. The management buys into the analytics. Another team could poach you, but if you didn't have the same kind of buy-in and resources.
Yes, I remember this correctly. I remember when the Astros were playing Pittsburgh this year, I wanted to say that Brent Strom was still with them.
He is.
But he doesn't travel with them a lot.
No, but
he's
Julia
like assistant, right?
Yeah, Julia made sure to point it out. He's a consultant or
so
something.
Like, if he's still doing that in Pittsburgh away from his –
yeah,
family,
why,
home,
yeah.
And area. Like, it didn't feel like his retirement was real or sincere. Like, we're guessing, but retiring after the 2021 season and then still being an assistant pitching coach
with the staff that you had
away from your home, like, it didn't feel like that was a true retirement.
The Pittsburgh.
He was working in 3 weeks. Like,
unless that Pittsburgh, here's the other thing. You could say unless Pittsburgh made him an offer he couldn't refuse, so he got back into baseball.
Yeah.
But then we're talking about the Pirates. Do we really think that the Pirates and ownership are going to give him a big deal to be a consultant? I don't.
Maybe he just lives in Arizona and, like, advises from far away. I pulled up where the Pirates do spring training. Because it would kind of make sense if they were in the Cactus League in Arizona, but they're not. They're in Florida. So that makes no sense.
It makes no sense.
It doesn't sound like a guy who is ready to quit working, right?
Yeah.
Texter Strom was a forefather of pitching analytics. I was kind of fuzzy on that, but Texter says that he was very pro analytics. I thought that he was. Like, kind of like Joe Maddon-y, where Joe Maddon, who was like, you know, an old guy but was like cool and hip and believed in numbers, he actually went away from it like later in his career. He thought it became too much. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Murphy Miller or Prince Strom? Where do you stand on that? 713-780-3776. We remember the campaign, right, of all of the, hey, vote Mauricio Dubon for the All-Star team. Vote this person for the All-Star team. The Astros need to keep that marketing up, but turn it all towards Cam Smith winning Rookie of the Year. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. If you're in the market for a new vehicle, you got to listen up. Maybe it's a Suburban, the 95-year-old Suburban. Monument Chevrolet is the dealer that you can trust. They're transparent, no-hassle pricing, get your car shopping done fast. Monument Chevrolet has been serving the Houston area for 50 years. They've been selling the Suburban for half of the Suburban's life, over half the Suburban's life. They've helped generations of families get into new vehicles, and these families keep coming back and coming back and coming back because they trust the people at Monument Chevrolet. No one's trying to get over on you. No one's trying to rip you off. No one's trying to upcharge you, get this super extended warranty for the next 500,000 miles. No, Monument Chevrolet, you know what you're going to get. You feel comfortable with what you're getting as well. Get a fair deal, a fast deal, an easy deal without wasting your time and aggravating stressful negotiations. No tricks, no time wasting, no hidden charges. If you've been waiting to upgrade your ride, now is the time to do it. Visit them online, monumentchevrolet.com. That's monumentchevrolet.com, or better yet, visit them in person, 225 and Beltway 8. 225 and Beltway 8. Check out their massive inventory, huge, huge inventory, huge lot of land out there. They have streets. Their lot's so big at Monument Chevrolet. Chevrolet, together, let's drive.
Broadcasting live from Pleasure Pier Galveston as part of ESPN Houston Summer Circuit.
Presented in part by our grand prize sponsor, Power On E-Bikes.
From the mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We've talked about our pitching coach style has led to some injuries. Has Arizona had injuries since Strom went to Arizona? I mean, I don't follow Arizona as closely as I follow Houston.
They had a couple of big names that kind of had issues and struggled.
Yeah, I mean, I know Burns this year, but Strom was gone this year.
No, I'm saying before that, they had even in the World Series, they were...
Oh, yeah, Jordan Montgomery's been banged for the year.
Yeah, and before Montgomery, the World Series year, they had put some pretty good money on the table for a couple of free agents, and those guys were not great. One came from Washington.
Do you believe... Oh...
He was pretty big.
You thinking of Patrick Corbin?
Yeah.
Didn't Corbin go from Arizona to Washington?
I thought he went from...
Like big money in Washington. Maybe they trade. I don't remember. Yeah. But I remember
Corbin. Corbin was there.
Corbin's had a decent year this year with the Rangers, like out of nowhere. Like last year he was like one of the worst pitchers in baseball, especially with the money. And then this year he's been pretty good with Texas. Pretty good pitching matchup too this week between Houston and Texas.
Oh, lots of good matchups. Yeah.
Really good pitching matchups between those two. What's your stance on that? Do you think the Astros have more arm injuries than like other teams relative to the sport?
No, I think that it's the sport. I think that it's exactly what we hear so many pitchers talking about. The reason why across the league Tommy John surgeries and arm surgeries are so far up is a combination of things. It starts with the fact that they started to crack down on the spider tack and all the different grip that allowed you to kind of get a better, firmer grip on the baseball, and now they're straining, they're squeezing the ball a little tighter to try and keep control of it as they're trying to throw quickly and trying to throw as hard as they can, because velocity has become even more of a tool that people want to, you know, really kind of emphasize. And I think it was just a perfect storm. There's a combination of so many things right now, and Glasnow was the guy that more than ever anybody else, I think, was at the forefront of talking about just how strenuous it is, from the grip to the fact that, you know, you have to pitch quicker and you have to pitch harder and you got to throw faster. That I don't think it's just specifically you can say, well, it's the Astros.
Yeah, I'm pro sticky stuff for what it's worth. But the somebody led me to a study done, like season-ending injuries around Major League Baseball for arms, and the Astros were middle of the pack. So I'm not a believer that it's the Astros because they want velocity and spin more than other teams, lead to more arm injuries than other baseball teams. I think it's a Major League Baseball issue. That article showed that the Astros are middle of the pack. And which team in baseball isn't chasing spin and velo?
They all are. That's the one thing I didn't mention in all of that, aside from the velocity and trying to throw as hard as you can and also be able to grip it so that you're not killing people and you have control of it, is the fact that spin rate is continuing to be one of the key factors that everybody emphasizes in pitching. And the more you spin, the more you snap, the more you snap, the more torque goes onto your arm.
Yeah. The Madison Bumgarner says a texture. Was that
no, Arizona
guy? No,
you got it right. It was Corbin.
Bumgarner was there.
He was.
I can't remember. Like, he did have some injuries, and then he retired kind
Strami,
of early.
I think Strami had him for a
did
year.
Did he have for a year?
Like
I
a
can't
year.
Remember. The years run together for me. The Astros, they pushed this all-star game, though, right? Like, everybody, yeah. Like, Dubon hit a walk-off home run. Oh, Dubon should be an all-star. The backup catcher should be an all-star. Salazar should be an all-star. All these guys should be all-stars. I want the Astros to keep up a marketing campaign. I want them to have that sort of vigor going forward. But what I want them to turn their attention to is Cam Smith winning the Rookie of the Year. And it's not so much because of Cam Smith getting an individual accolade on his trophy case and his mantle. I selfishly want the first
draft
pick.
Yeah.
But they should start getting the word out. Keep up the marketing campaign. Get Cam Smith the Rookie of the Year. He's got a long way to go, but, hey, help it out a little bit.
Look, we scoffed at the commercial, and rightfully so, at some of the guys they were trying to promote as all-stars. Christian Walker was in the middle of that commercial. It's like, I get it. You just got him. You know, it was a big signing. But the season that he started, the way he started the season, ain't no way he's going to be an all-star. This is legit. This is your guy that has a legit chance to win it, and he continues to, like, get better throughout the year. Now, he's had a little fall off, I get it, but overall, from where he started from to where he now currently is, it's a race. You need to put all your assets behind him. You need to just do this. I mean, we did it for years. I remember when the Rockets were pushing James Harden for, like, an all defensive team and all NBA team, and it's like, are you kidding me? Like, there's one thing he's not going to be, and it's an all-defensive player. But if you have the resources, use them.
This is more significant than Harden Defensive Player of the Year, though, because it helps your team.
Oh, absolutely.
It helps your team with that first-round pick because of the little PIP or whatever it's called. Now, they can also do it with Hunter Brown. So, like, maybe a two-prong campaign. Mm-hmm. Get Cam Smith, the American League Rookie of the Year, or at least push for it, and then also try to push for Hunter Brown to be the American League Cy Young. I do think there's a better chance for Hunter Brown to be top three in AL Cy Young than I think there is for Cam Smith to win the AL Rookie of the Year. In fact, that's pretty safe to say right now, because Cam's probably second or third in AL Rookie of the Year odds right now, whereas Hunter Brown, I believe, is second.
Yeah, and I mean, look, hiccup aside in the last start, Hunter Brown, I think it's going to be, you know, two guys in that race for the rest, Scooble and him, I believe. And Fromber might even be able to sneak into that conversation as well. But I believe that he's got a legit chance, too. I think from a Cam perspective, he started out slow. Wilson started out red hot and built up a lead that I don't want to say is insurmountable, but it's an uphill climb for him because of it.
Yeah.
Not that he can't do it. But it's the other thing that you mentioned with all this. It's not just the assets that are free, like the commercial spots you get and all the things like that. Teams forever and a day would try to buy votes.
Do it.
I mean,
buy votes for draft picks,
you
baby.
Find out who votes. And
I'm
like,
for it.
Remember in the past, like each guy, we all would have a vote for something if you were on a team broadcast. And they would break them up a little bit. But inevitably, you all got the gifts. So some you were getting gifts in the mail. Vote Kobe Bryant. Elect Kobe Bryant for like MVP or whatever it was. And you'd get like, you know, one, it's the campaign buttons and the cutesy stuff. And then they would give you something really kind of nicer try and buy your votes.
Do it. Buy the votes. Now, Fromber's not as important from the team aspect because he doesn't qualify for the PIP thing. Hunter Brown does. Cam Smith does. So, like, it's more advantageous for those guys to do well. And for Hunter Brown, it just takes top three. Cam does have to win it altogether. All right, 713-780-ESPN. But I will say this. If Cam doesn't win the Rookie of the Year, he can still get you a draft pick in the future if he gets a top three MVP vote, like Hunter Brown. Like those, the PIP guys, they have to be top 100 prospects. They have to be caught up on opening day as opposed to in season. And then if they don't win the Rookie of the Year, they're still eligible for an extra draft pick if they win a Cy Young, similar to Hunter Brown. All right, Todd Kallas, TV voice of the Houston Astros. He'll be joining us next. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Pleasure Pier in Galveston on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Time to get the latest about the Stros with Todd Callis. Brought to you by Houston Powder Coaters and Pipe Fitters Local 211. Here's Joel and Jeremy with Todd Callis.
We go straight out to the HRNP guest line, joined by the TV voice of the Houston Astros, Todd Callis. TK, thanks for taking a few minutes hanging out with the Killer Bees. I guess you could just summarize the Guardian series as baseball, right? You had the good road trip. You sweep the Dodgers. The Guards hadn't won in over 10 games, and then they come into the dike and sweep you. That's just baseball, right?
Yeah, it's baseball, and I think, you know, the Astros have been playing over their skis a little bit with all those injuries, and it was bound to regress a little bit. I did not see that sweep coming. Certainly that second game was very winnable, and the Astros couldn't get it done in extra innings. But, yeah, it was kind of one of those series that you knew going in might be, you know, they call it on the football schedule a trap game, but like a trap series where the Astros were coming back from the West Coast, coming off a high, taking on a Cleveland team that hadn't won in a while. But, disappointing to say the least. But now they get a fresh shot with the Rangers.
You know, TK, we talked about it. The Astros are going to Astros sometimes. And remember coming out of the break last year when they had that big series with the Mariners and they crushed them and then they got swept by the A's. Like, it was the perfect storm, as you said, coming off the road trip and all the success. Now you're home, you're comfortable, and you're playing a team that lost 10 in a row. And these things sometimes have a way of happening. But a lot of people were panicking. And we were like, don't lose your minds, people. Look at how good this team has been. The one thing that you mentioned was that winnable game in game two. Hunter Brown, to me, that was the most surprising thing of the entire series. I was banking on him to be dealing. He had been so hot. Do you think not one of those nights? Do you think he was tipping his pitches? He kind of indicated he might have been.
Yeah, he said that in the postgame that he wanted to go back and look at the video. I mean, they were on stuff like no other offense has been on stuff this year. So credit to the Guardians, whether they caught something off them or they just had good swings. But, yeah, I didn't have that either. I did not have Hunter struggling against Cleveland's offense as bad as they had been for the previous 2 weeks. So that was a surprising game for sure. Now you've got Hunter pitching Sunday. You've got Fromber tomorrow and Lance today. It's going to be three good pitching matchups against the Rangers. But that Hunter start was that was the last thing I expected, was that the Guardians would outscore the Astros that day. I could see maybe a low-scoring game that the Guardians could beat Hunter, but not 10 runs against six that afternoon or that evening.
Todd Callis joining us on the HRNP guest line. A lot of fan frustration, as you know, TK, with the injuries lately over the years. And we know that 99% of this is behind the scenes with medical and athletic trainers and doctors. Arguing it from an Astros side, what will be your defense of the handling of the return to play that the Astros have in place?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, everybody's talking about it being a rush system. There's times when it feels rushed when Jake goes down after having that precautionary couple of days off. But then there's other times you look at these pitchers, and I feel like they're slow rolling with Arrigetti and Luis Garcia and Christian Javier. They are definitely taking as much time as possible to make sure they're 100% healthy. So, I don't know exactly what went on. I know Myers got a full workout before the game on Wednesday. He was cleared to play. He felt good. Could have been a situation where even had he sat that day and had the day off yesterday, he might have tweaked it tonight running out to center field. Just kind of one of those things. So hopefully the strain's not going to last too long. But going back to your original question, I would say, you know, based on the anecdote that he got re-injured, that it seemed like it was a fast return. But I think in general, they really slow roll these guys coming back from injury and make sure, whether it's Pena or Alvarez or the previous pitchers that I mentioned, that they are more than 100% ready to go.
I want to take a little step back, TK, because I think that, you know, because of what happened in the Cleveland series, there was little a fall off from the euphoria of what happened on that road trip. But that sweep of the Dodgers for you guys, as well as the team, it's just another regular season series. It was more. It felt like it was going to be more. I think because the Astros weren't at full strength, there were a lot of people that weren't anticipating them doing what they did. And then on top of it, the way they did it and the way that they just were historic in the win on Friday night and Christian Walker and all those things. It had to be, even for you guys, a really fun ride. And then as a sidebar, your thoughts on what Hershiser said from a broadcast perspective when you're getting your butt handed to you like they were.
Yeah, first of all, yeah, I was one of those people that was surprised with the sweep. I didn't think they were going to sweep the Dodgers going in there. I would have loved to have seen 2 out of 3 and wouldn't have been shocked if they lost that series based on all the injuries they're dealing with. So, yeah, Blummer and I were kind of looking at each other over the weekend in L.A. like, what is going on? Like, how do these guys keep figuring out a way to get it done? It was brilliant. I mean, that 18-1 game had fireworks that night on the 4th of July, so everybody had to hang out and watch the drumming at the hand of the Astros. It was pretty awesome. And Hershiser, the way he said it, I think got him in more trouble. If he would have just said, hey, seems like these guys are on a lot of pitches today. Maybe they're seeing something in the delivery here that we need to clean up, talking about their starter Ben Kasperius or maybe Noah Davis, their reliever who gave up a bunch of runs. But instead, the way he said it with the paraphrase, hate to open a wound here, it made you think that he was referring to 2017. Whether he was or not, that was what the interpretation was. So it was not a good look for him to do it in that form. He could have easily said it a different way.
You're very politically correct. That's the beauty of being in sports radio is we don't have to be as politically correct. We can just say whatever we want to say. A new name in the lineup for you to fill out today, Bryce Matthews playing second, batting eighth, local kid from Atascocita. What are the Astros getting with Bryce?
They're getting a guy with a lot of tools who can hit the ball out and hit the ball off the wall, who had a great month of June. July's been okay. I was curious about the timing because one thing Dana Brown has consistently said is they're hoping to get more contact out of Bryce Matthews, and then once we do that, it'll be time for him to get a shot at the big league level. He's not really been hitting with a lot of contact here in the month of July. He's got a lot of strikeouts recently, but they're at the point now where the guys that they were using to fill in, not named Bryce Matthews, who had more time in the big leagues than Bryce, have been striking out their share as well. So I guess the Astros figured, hey, if we're going to go with player A, B, and C, and they're striking out X percentage of time, why not go with a young kid who might provide a spark, especially coming off that tough series? So it's an exciting time for Bryce, local kid, Astros Youth Academy kid, first time ever a kid from the Astros Youth Academy has made it to big league. So a lot going on tonight, a lot to be excited about for Bryce. He is, as Joe Espada said, not a finished product yet. You're still going to see swing and miss. But hopefully he can connect on one and maybe drive in a run or hit one out tonight.
TK, clean slate. You've seen them all. We've seen all the Cinderella stories, the Bill Murray. It's a Cinderella story. These guys are unbelievable. You're looking at all the different kind of stories you weren't expecting this year. When you look at the one start of Jason Alexander to, you know, short coming in at short and being a defensive guy and then having an offensive explosion in L.A., what's your favorite Cinderella story so far this year with some of those guys?
Oh, man, so many to choose from, right? I mean, Cooper wins the game against the Phillies with that home run in the bullpen and right center against Ranger Suarez. You don't see coming. Trammell with a great catch on Freddie Freeman's line drive to save that game. One of the ones to me that's under the radar is because, you know, Ryan Gusto is still fighting to stay in that rotation. When the Astros go back to a five-man rotation, we're not sure who's going to be the guy moved to the bullpen. It could be Gusto. But if he goes in to Dodger Stadium, and the Astros had already won the first two games of the series, and you're not really anticipating a sweep of that team in their home stadium, and he was able to pitch six innings of one-run baseball to finish off that sweep. So that was one of the better ones for me. But the overall biggest Cinderella story, I think, might be, just based on where he was last year and what he's done this year, Steven Okert. His numbers are ridiculously good this year, and coming off a very mediocre season when he wasn't really confident with the Twins last year. So that might be my overall biggest Cinderella story of the year, is how well he has done.
Todd, his pitching probable is pretty good. Lance Slider tonight, Fromber DeGrom tomorrow, Hunter Eovaldi on Sunday. There should be a lot of really good pitching over at Daikin Park this weekend.
Yeah, really good pitching. And when you look at the Rangers team, that's what they've been built on this year. And it's kind of hard to figure out why they're under 500 because their lineup looks good enough to be – when they have one of the best pitching staffs in baseball, this lineup looks good enough for them to be contending for the division title right now instead of being 9 or 10 games out. I guess they're 9.5 out starting today's play. But their offense just hasn't matched as good as their pitching has been. So, yeah, it's all three really good pitching matchups. Lance against Leiter, Fromber against DeGrom, and Hunter against Eovaldi. We don't have tomorrow's game. It's on Fox. But Hunter against Eovaldi going into the All-Star break, that's going to be outstanding. Plummer's not with me this weekend, by the way. He's got he's got plans in Chicago this weekend as they celebrate the 20th year of their 05 championship. But we got Baggy, the Hall of Famer. Jeff Bagwell is going to join me in the booth for two games.
Is there a challenge to having to, you know, work with somebody new?
Not when it's Baggy, because I've done it before. Yeah. And if it was a first time, maybe there's a little feeling out process. But with Baggy, we've worked together before. I know what makes him tick. Baggy's unique in that he will throw out a question in the middle of a broadcast that he doesn't know the answer to, that I may or may not know the answer to, but he'll just throw it out there. So he has to be working on the computer a lot, doing a lot of research. He has our statistician, yeah, Phil Bugeaud, doing the same thing. So I love his insight, and obviously working with Plummer all these years, Plummer's awesome, but Baggy sees the game differently than most people. And I think it's really unique, and if you listen in on what he is saying about either what's about to happen or what should have happened, it's a really unique perspective, and I really enjoy the games we get to work together.
I was going to say, you know, because people, it's the perfect combination because you only get them for short doses, but it's everything that you said and the fact that he has little to no filter and just the most brutal honesty in the world makes him so fun to listen to.
Oh, yeah. And he's such a, like, I feel like I'm an Astros fan. Blummer's an Astros fan. Baggy lives and dies. Like, he is super fan. He is so into the game that it's kind of crazy to think about. Like a Hall of Famer who had his share of success in his time, but he lives, breathes, and dies with Astros victory. So it'll be fun to have him in the booth tonight and on Sunday.
He's not afraid of the word we.
No.
He loves the word we.
That's true.
I vaguely remember a story he told about Joe West that had me rolling.
Oh, he had a couple.
Remember
with Joe West when he was a young player?
Yeah.
And he basically set him in his place and told him, yeah, it ain't like that.
Yeah, I remember that one. That was pretty good. Well, TK, have fun. Have fun with Baggy. Have a great call. We'll be listening. We'll catch up next week.
Yeah, we'll talk to you guys after the All-Star break from Seattle.
Sounds good. Todd Kallas, TV voice of the Houston Astros, joining us on the HR&P guest line. Our conversation presented by Pipefitters Local 211. They do it right. I'm going to throw some trade scenarios by you when we come back. Trade deadline, 20 days away, a little less than 3 weeks away. I'm going to throw some scenarios by you, see which ones of these you like the best. 713-780-3776. You can play along, too. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You're back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from Pleasure Pier Galveston as part of ESPN Houston's Summer Circuit.
Presented in part by our grand prize sponsor, Power On E-Bikes.
From the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees inside of Sweet Scoops on Pleasure Pier in Galveston. 713-780-ESPN. We'll get to these trade scenarios in a moment. I got a little exercise for you boys and girls. But first, let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Israel is on the HRMP listener line. What is up, Israel? How are you?
What's up? I'm blessed, man. I just wanted to thank you, Jeremy, for your campaign, man. You know what I'm saying? I understand that you want the pick. It's a business. That's just a business.
I want the pick.
As far as getting a pick from a man. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Right now, he's a little behind eight ball as far as getting 286, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, he's a little bit behind eight ball. He might not catch that guy in Oakland, but the guy, well, not Oakland, but for the A's. But the guy for the A's playing that rinky-dink part, he got off to a high start. He three something, you know what I'm saying? And he still got a shot, though. Less than half of the season left. And I just wanted to thank you for that. And Joel, hey, Wisconsin. And when I said it, he doesn't have a shot. He didn't have a shot to be rookie of the year. He got a shot. It's not over. Hey, and I want to also salute Dana for the three brothers that's going to be starting today. I don't know if Trammell going to be in the lineup. Y'all had the lineup. Trammell,
yeah,
Matthews, and
it.
Cam. And you know what I mean? And give it up to the brothers. And the last thing. I want to work with KD. Y'all see the KD billboards around town?
Yeah.
He's in the front rows. They can never be lined up with the guys, man. You get rid of Paul Wall, all the Slim Thug and all them guys, they're going to be in the front row, man. They're going to pay for the tickets. Because KD, when the Lakers and all the big time, when the big games come, they're going to be there. And you know what I mean? Support the guys, man. I'm with H-Town. And that's it.
Oh, Chi-Town, kiss ass. You started by kissing Jeremy's ass. Stop it, Israel. The fake tough stuff. Come on, man.
I just want to give a shout-out to the brothers.
Exactly. And I was like, and then when he's bringing up, I was like, who do we have that we can throw in the mix from a white performer standpoint?
No, but I do want Cam. Also, if Cam Smith does win Rookie of the Year, I will admit that I was wrong on being on the opening day roster, because you can't get the pick unless he's up on the opening day roster. So,
look, if he wins it, Israel gets the credit. There's no doubt. Sure. If Reed Sheppard is a bust, he gets the credit. But he's going to have to wear it if he doesn't get those things.
For sure.
If they don't get those things.
For sure. I was going to say something else, too. I forgot what I was going to say.
But Israel loves – never mind.
No, I was going to say – it has something to do with – Cam. Even if Cam doesn't win Rookie of the Year, he's having a great rookie season.
Yes.
Like, I want to be very clear on that, because people think I don't like Cam. Never the case. I would have manipulated the time because I like Cam. But if he wins Rookie of the Year, it makes it a moot point. If Dana locks him up to a contract extension, it makes that a moot point too. But to be very clear, so we're all on the same page, Cam is having an excellent rookie season. We all agree on that. All right, so – NBA, Major League Baseball trade deadline stuff have been out there. Some content's been out there. We're a few weeks away from the trade deadline. So lots to talk about when it comes to this. ESPN had a story today about, like, what is the perfect fit for every single Major League Baseball team that's in the hunt. They mentioned Seth Lugo. I think Seth Lugo would be a perfect. Now, this is not them, like, rumored to be in on Seth Lugo. It's not the Astros have been calling about Seth Lugo. This is just, like, what is the perfect match for the Astros? I think Seth Lugo would be fine. You had a really good starting pitcher that would be your third best starter.
Yeah, but at the same time, as I always say, the price matters. And it's a twofold situation. What are you giving up? And then what are you doing to the cap and the tax? And how willing is Crane and the organization going to be to paying that? So it's nice to take one of the better pitchers that might be on the market. And Kansas City's not out of it by any stretch, but if they are willing to move on from him, what are you giving up, and then where does that put you financially? I think that's where the key discussions, the crux of this, would have to come from. Because, yes, he'd absolutely be a really good addition to this starting rotation, but at what price?
Yeah, that's always comes into play. He wouldn't be cheap either. He'd be one of the better starting pitchers on the market, and the Astros don't have a terrific farm system that teams are going to be – like, they're not going to win shootouts for people on the trade deadline. Like,
he's making a lot of money, too, right?
$15 million. I mean,
that's not bad. I thought it was 20.
It's not crazy, but it does push you into the competitive balance tax. So 15 turns into whatever the tax is on that. It turns into 17.5 or whatever. Now, he does have a player option for next year, but he'd probably turn that down because he'd get more money on the open market.
And if it happens anything close to Kikuchi and he has success with a really good team behind him and a team that's rolling and – we just got done talking about the pitching coaches. If they can do anything with him at all to kind of enhance what he already does, then his value is probably going up to a level just like Kikuchi, where when he hits the open market, you're not going to be able to compete.
And like you said, they're one of those tweener teams. Like, that's why there's not a lot of activity right now, is because there's a lot of tweener teams. Like, Texas could be a tweener team. Kansas City's only 3.5 games out of the playoffs. Like, that's in the race.
Way too close for them to be pulling the plug.
And they have won 4 in a row, so, like, that helps out too. But, yeah, if the Astros acquired Seth Lugo today, would I be excited about that? I would be excited about that.
I think this is a make-or-break, and hear me out, a make-or-break series for the Rangers, not for the rest of the season, for how they handle the trade deadline. If they're 9.5 out now and they somehow sweep the Astros and they get right back in the thick of it, I think they're buyers.
Oh, for sure.
But I think if they go down, you know, they lose 2 out of 3, or if they get swept,
uh-huh,
I think that's the difference between them saying, okay, let's cut some salaries, let's cut bait and restart next year.
Well, I mean, you look at their rotation, it's like, that's a formidable rotation. That'd be a rotation that you wouldn't want to face in the postseason. Like, I mean, just look who they're starting this week. I mean, Leiter's been really good.
Yeah.
Then you got DeGrom, who's been healthy. And when DeGrom's been healthy in his life, he's been really good. And then you're throwing Eovaldi, who's been fantastic this season. Their rotation's nasty.
Like, and Rocker?
Yeah,
he's been better lately, but he's got that big arm that everybody was talking about when he came out of Bandy.
He was getting rocked early, but he's been better lately.
No pun.
No, I didn't. Okay. I'm just so funny, it comes to me naturally. I had zero pun. Why'd you look at him like that, AJ? You looked at him like, I don't think I'm funny. Like, he doesn't think I'm funny.
I was just looking at his reaction. That's all I was looking at.
Yeah. Uh-huh. All right. I'm trying to figure out how I want to do this. Let's save the trade stuff until the top of the hour. There's some injury news from Brian McTaggart. Jeremy Pena is ramping up work in the weight room and doing, quote, somewhat baseball activities. What is somewhat baseball? I mean, he's probably like jogging, right? He's probably like lightly throwing a baseball. That's what I guess it would be.
I don't like it.
Why not?
Because of what we just went through with Jake.
You feel like it's a little bit of a rush?
Yeah. I mean, why are we rushing at all when we're heading to the All-Star break?
Fair. I'm sorry for interrupting. Go ahead.
No, but the only thing that I just popped into my head is I was going to say you get the whole All-Star break to ramp up. But you really don't, because even if he's not playing the game, this is his first All-Star game.
Yeah.
He's going to go. He's going to partake. So, and that's a big thing to him, and I understand it. I just get a little cringy when you start another ramping up. Like, all we hear about is, like, the rush job with a lot of guys that has caused a lot of what we have been talking about for a couple weeks. That's a little cringy.
He's just trying to get his pump going. That way, when he goes to the All-Star game, he looks good.
He's got accents. That's the hammers are always there.
The weight room stuff's kind of like, okay. But the somewhat baseball activities, I don't really get. Like, he's probably lightly throwing a baseball. But it doesn't seem like he's anywhere close. Like, if I'm reading, starting to do some work in the weight room and then somewhat baseball activities, that's still like 2 weeks minimum.
Yeah, is minimum. Now, the cracked rib is on the throwing arm side?
I don't know.
Because I would assume that it's not on the throwing arm side that he can – that, and I think it is. Because I was going to say, then I don't mind him throwing a little bit.
Well, I mean, he was hit here. So that'd be the glove side. I don't know. I mean, you would think he got the broken rib from where he got hit, right?
Right.
And he got hit on the lead left
rib. So then
rib.
He could throw. Yeah. So then it's the other side. So at least you could throw a little bit. And I don't think he's going to be throwing gas. So, okay.
Well, he did anyways.
But I just get a little cringeworthy when I hear ramping up with a guy that's hurt.
I mean, seeing that note, though, I still think he's 2 weeks away.
Oh,
minimum.
Yeah. Well, and even Espada said, like, we're not even thinking about it till after the All-Star game. So you know he wasn't going to play, which means you know that as much as it's, you know, you can try and minimalize it and say it wasn't, it's a cracked rib. It's still a cracked rib that's probably significant enough that you'd like to have him for the Seattle series. I wouldn't count on it.
I'm thinking 2 weeks.
Yeah, I know.
I think that it's going to end up being like a 4 week injury. And people call me a clown for saying it was going to be a 4 week injury.
And I think Myers is going to be way more than the 10 days.
I don't know if I want to be right or wrong about that. Taggart says Alvarez is not swinging a bat yet. So there is that, which isn't a surprise. Like, I didn't expect him to be swinging a bat
September?
Right now. Yeah, probably.
Seems like it.
They're going to expedite it, though, once he's swinging a bat.
Oh, I bet you they are ramping him up.
And then Dubin and Rogers have shifted their rehabs to Florida. So, that's good. Rogers
good.
Maybe closer. Dubin, like, I thought whenever Dubin had the elbow thing, remember he had the elbow thing at the start of the year, too. Like, it feels like Dubin's elbow is a ticking time bomb. But that's good that he's not shelved for the entire year.
No, and I think that the big thing is that when we've seen guys that actually do return shortly after it, it's once they go down to Florida and they're competitive with live pitching, live hitting. You know, we've seen a lot of guys that go through that, Trammell, and then they're ready to go. So I would hope that they get ramped up on some live baseball activities so that we are getting closer to them coming back.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. Text, you're funny that everyone keeps saying our farm system sucks, but didn't we win the AAA championship? Yeah, but you did that with a lot of kind of 4A players. Like, you did that with a lot of really good AAA players, but not a ton of, like, prospects. Like, Gusto was on that team. Gordon's on that team. Obviously, they're helping you. Matthews was on that team for, like, the final month. He's helping you. Melton was on that team late. You hope he helps you. But none of those guys are, like, I mean, Matthews is the top prospect of them. Matthews is in the MLB top 100 as of today.
The easiest way to kind of look at that, too, is it's not just your AAA team. Because you're right. To win the AAA championship is great. That means you got a whole lot of guys that probably aren't good enough to play in the bigs, but are really good at AAA. When your farm system is complete and really, really good, that means from A-ball all the way up, it is just littered with talent or guys that have enough talent that at some point in their careers, they'll be playing Major League Baseball, and they're all on different time frames. Because I worked in an organization where winning matters to the point where Daryl Morey was focused on winning the G League championship. And it means absolutely nothing at the end of the day other than you can get an extra, you know, rinky-dink ring and you get some other accolades. But the bottom line is if your G League team was that good, those guys would be on your NBA roster.
Yeah. Good news there on Dubin and Rogers, though. 713-780-ESPN. You know Pena's in the weight room. Can't keep him out of it, says Blaine. Same. Somewhat baseball activities, playing hacky sack. Baseball players do like playing hacky sack
and
for whatever reason.
And catch with a football.
Yeah, it's good for pitchers' arms.
Yeah.
way they throw it. All right, 713-780-ESPN. I'm going to give you options on what you would rather see on the Astros, players specifically. We'll do that on the other side. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.